This episode of The Trail Went Cold is brought to you by our sponsor, Wink, whom we would like to thank for being such a great supporter of our show. Wink is offering our audience members who are over 21 and live in the U.S. a $20 credit plus free shipping on their first order of 4 bottles of wine as a new member of Wink. So please visit trywink.com/cold. That's trywinc.com/cold. Thank you and enjoy the show. June 25th, 2001. Hood River, Oregon. During a date with a friend at his rural home, 41-year-old Eric Tamiyasu hears strange noises outside and discovers an unidentified shoe print. After his friend leaves, Eric is not heard from for 5 days. His decomposing body is eventually discovered in his bed, and it turns out he has been shot 3 times in the head. The investigation would uncover a number of intriguing suspects, including the local sheriff, a close friend and business partner, and the person who discovered Eric's body, but the murder is never solved. After that, the trail went cold. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host, Robin Warder, and today we are going to be examining a case which can best be described as a whodunit, the 2001 murder of Eric Tamiyasu. This case was featured on one of the very last episodes of Unsolved Mysteries, and remains one of my favorite segments from the later seasons of the show. It almost resembles the plot of a murder mystery story, because there are multiple suspects who each seemingly had their own motive to kill the victim. Two of them are acquaintances of Eric, a close friend who supposedly had a dispute with him over money, and the person who discovered Eric's body and acted like they were the best of friends, though some people would question that claim. And then there's the sheriff investigating the case, who raised some eyebrows by making the surprising decision to destroy a crucial piece of evidence. I'm going to explore the likelihood of each of these suspects being the killer, and also look into the possibility that the perpetrator might have been someone not even mentioned on the show. However, before we get started, just a brief reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play Music. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of those sites to help spread the word and garner us some more exposure. The Trail Went Cold is now on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, which may include stickers and personalized thank you cards, early access to episodes, and bonus content. So with all that out of the way, let us now examine the unsolved murder of Eric Tamiyasu. Our story begins in the small town of Hood River, Oregon in 2001. Our central figure is 41-year-old Eric Tamiyasu, who lives in a rural house outside of town in a remote area on Binns Hill Road. He runs a fruit orchard business, which is located right next to his home. Eric is currently single, but on the evening of June 25th, he invited a friend named Diana Anderson over to his house. They had both known each other for years, but were exploring the possibility of taking things further, so this was officially their first date. Anyway, at around 11 p.m, Eric and Diana both heard some odd tapping noises from outside one of the windows. Eric went to have a peek, but saw nothing. Shortly thereafter, Eric heard the doorbell ring, but when he answered it, no one was there. The doorbell soon rang again, but this time, when Eric opened the door, he thought he could hear the sound of footsteps running away. Eric and Diana both decided to go outside and have a closer look, and discover what appeared to be a shoe print in the dirt. The couple was starting to get spooked, but there would be no more incidents for the rest of the evening. Diana soon left Eric's house and drove home, but but this would turn out to be the last time he was seen alive. Over the course of the next 5 days, word started to spread among Eric's friends that no one had heard from him. When a business consultant and alleged close friend named Don Dixon learned about this, he decided to go check on Eric at his home. When Don arrived, no one answered the front door, but Don possessed a spare key to the back door, which Eric had given him, so he let himself inside. Upon entering, Don immediately detected a foul odor. He searched the house and eventually made his way to Eric's bedroom, where he was horrified to discover Eric's decomposing body lying on the bed. The Hood River County Sheriff's Department were immediately summoned to the scene, and at first glance, there did not appear to be any signs of foul play. It was initially suspected that Eric's death may have been natural causes brought on by some sort of medical issue, such as a heart attack. However, after Eric's body was taken away from the scene, Hood River County Sheriff Joe Wampler approached Don Dixon with an odd request. Because of the decomposition, Eric's bedding and mattress had been soiled, so Wampler claimed he wanted to spare Eric's family the grief of seeing that. Since he couldn't find any bullets or shells, and had no reason to believe foul play had taken place, he didn't think it was necessary to keep the mattress or bedding around. Wampler wanted to know if Eric had a burn pile on his property, and if Don would assist him with moving the mattress and bedding outside and setting fire to them. Don agreed to the request, and after the items were moved outside, he burned them until there was nothing left but a metal frame and a pile of ashes. Well, guess what? When the autopsy was performed on Eric's body the following day, it was discovered that he had 3 small bullets from a .22 caliber gun lodged in his head, which had been covered up by the advanced state of decomposition. So it was now apparent that Eric was murdered in his bed, execution style, by an unknown assailant. It was estimated that Eric had been dead 4 or 5 days before his body was discovered, so he was likely killed a short time after Diana Anderson left his house. There were no signs of struggle, and since nothing appeared to have been taken from the home, robbery was not the apparent motive. It also now became clear that by giving the okay to burn Eric's mattress and bedding, Sheriff Wampler had destroyed potentially crucial evidence. Wampler maintained that since the decomposition on Eric's head had covered up the bullet holes, and there were no signs of any shells at the scene, he had mistakenly assumed no foul play had taken place. However, when Don Dixon thought over Wampler's decision, he started to become suspicious. Don claimed he remembered a previous conversation he had with Eric, where he told him that he had become romantically involved with an older Polynesian woman. Since Wampler's wife was an older Polynesian woman, Don wondered if perhaps this gave the sheriff a potential motive to murder Eric and cover up the evidence. Well, of course, Wampler denied these allegations and claimed there was no truth to the rumor that his wife was having an affair with Eric. He continued to maintain that he destroyed the mattress to spare Eric's family and only had the best intentions. In his own words, quote, "We have always just tried to be nice guys and not subject families to more trauma," end quote. When Eric's family registered a complaint about the destruction of private property, the sheriff's office agreed to pay for a replacement bed for them. Sheriff Wampler wasn't the only potential suspect Don Dixon pointed the finger at. One of Eric Tomiyasu's closest friends was a guy named Eric Smith, and the two of them were sometimes business partners. They both happened to have offices in the same building where Dixon worked. According to Don, a few days before the murder, he happened to pass by Tomiyasu's office and overheard a heated argument between him and Eric Smith. The two friends previously had a side business selling used cars which had gone under, and Dixon claimed that Tomiyasu was accusing Smith of pocketing around $50,000 to $60,000 of the money they had invested. Tomiyasu told Smith that he owed him that money and that he really needed it because his fruit orchard business was going through a tough time. Dixon then said he witnessed Tomiyasu storm out of the building in frustration and drive away, which turned out to be the last time he ever saw him alive. While Smith maintained this argument never actually happened, and that neither he nor Tomiyasu owed each other money. Investigators looked into these claims, and while it was true that the two men had invested money in a failed used car business, they'd only invested $15,000 each, not the $50,000 to $60,000 that Dixon claimed. To counter the accusations, Smith directed suspicion towards Dixon, as he believed that Dixon was greatly exaggerating the closeness of his friendship with Tomiyasu. In Smith's words, quote, "What Eric told me was that Don is somebody he bought spray from, period. talk to any one of Eric's friends, and most of them don't even know who Don is. End quote. But there was a reason why some people wondered if Don might be directly involved in the murder. Immediately after discovering Eric's body, Don had made a hysterical phone call to his sister, Ramona Tomiyasu, frantically informing her about her brother's death. But oddly, even though Don told Ramona that it didn't look like there was any foul play, he also said there didn't appear to be any exit wounds. Well, the problem is that no one even noticed the gunshot wounds in Eric's head until the autopsy was performed one day later. Before that, investigators just assumed that he had died of natural causes and had no inkling that he was shot. Well, Don's response to this was that since Eric had been feeling depressed around this time, his initial thoughts upon finding Eric's body was that he had committed suicide. When he called Ramona and mentioned there were no exit wounds, he was going under the assumption that Eric had shot himself, in spite of the fact that no gun was present at the scene. Some people also found it suspicious that Don had agreed to Sheriff Wampler's request to burn Eric's mattress and bedding without hesitation and personally set them on fire. Whatever the case, since Joe Wampler, Eric Smith, and Don Dixon were all considered possible suspects, the Hood River County Sheriff's Department wanted each of them to undergo polygraph tests. Wampler and Smith both cooperated and passed their tests, but there were complications with Dixon. At first, he refused to take one before changing his mind, but each time they tried to administer the test, examiners could not get a baseline readout to ensure its accuracy. A baseline test is when the subject of a polygraph is asked a number of routine questions beforehand to program the physiological makeup into the machine, but for some reason, this process just did not work with Dixon. He eventually elected to take a polygraph which was administered independently at his own expense, but the results of that test were inconclusive, due largely to the fact that Dixon was taking medication for a kidney transplant he had recently underwent. Anyway, the case was featured on Unsolved Mysteries in July of 2002, but failed to generate any leads which implicated a specific suspect. However, in 2016, KOIN6 News in Portland decided to do a new story on the murder and shared information about a new potential suspect. As you recall, the last person to see Eric alive was his friend, Diane Anderson, who was on a date with him before leaving his house that night. Well, it turned out Diana had an ex-boyfriend who also happened to be the father of her child and had a history of stalking-like behavior. This man was not named, but it was hard to overlook the fact that Eric and Diana had heard strange noises outside the house during their date and that the doorbell rang on two occasions before they thought they heard someone running away. Even though Diana claimed they had noticed a shoe print outside the house that night, the area was hit by heavy rains over the course of the next few days, so the shoe print was gone by the time Eric's body was discovered. During KOIN6's news story, Don Dixon was interviewed and stated that if he had his way, he'd have already arrested two people for their involvement in Eric's murder, Diana's ex-boyfriend and Sheriff Wampler. But in spite of all the fingers which have been pointed at multiple suspects, no one has ever been charged with the death of Eric Tomiyasu. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. But before we continue, I think now would be an ideal time to pour myself a glass of wine and propose a toast to our wonderful sponsor, Wink, who have always been great supporters of our podcast. Wink is targeting a new generation of wine drinkers who want to do away with the pretense and simply enjoy reasonably priced, great wine. Wink custom tailors wines to the taste of the individual consumer and delivers 3 bottles of wine each month to your doorstep for $39 plus free shipping. When you visit Wink and take their 20-second palate profile quiz, you'll get instant wine recommendations based on your unique profile. The price point for most wines is $13, so by signing up with Wink, you are getting your first bottle for free. Wink is offering our audience members who are over 21 and live in the U.S. a $20 credit, plus free shipping on your first order of 4 bottles of wine as a new member of Wink. Your wine delivery will be branded Wink. Wink is the wine club associated with Wink. So what vintage of wine should I select for our toast? Here's a great one from Monterey, California. A 2017 bottle of Debts and Lessons Riesling, which was crafted by Wink's assistant winemaker, Robert Dougherty. The wine is named after his debts of gratitude and lessons learned. Introducing a note of reflection to the simple act of drinking a bottle of wine, Debts and Lessons proves that an already positive experience can also spark a deeper appreciation and celebration of life. This vibrant, sweet vintage has tasting notes of candied lemon, crushed rock, green apple, and honeysuckle, and is best served chilled with sushi, Thai food, or Indian food. So to receive a $20 credit and free shipping on 4 bottles of wine just like this one on your first order, go to trywink.com/cold. That's trywink.com/cold. trywinc.com/cold. So let's raise our glasses high, and here's a toast to Wink. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of our show. So like I said in the intro, this case is a true whodunit, which seems like something out of a fictional murder mystery, as it features multiple suspects who all seem to have their own motive for wanting the victim dead. I'm going to start off by sharing the initial impressions I had of each suspect upon my first viewing of the Unsolved Mystery segment. Eric Smith seemed like a level-headed guy, Sheriff Wampler seemed like he was incompetent at best and corrupt at worst, and Don Dixon, well, he seemed like a rather odd individual. But of course, you should never assume someone's guilt or innocence based solely on their demeanor during a television interview. However, it's worth noting that the main source who provided potential motives for why Wampler and Smith would want Tomoyasu dead was Dixon. He was the one who started the rumors that Tomoyasu was having an affair with the sheriff's wife, and that he was angry at Smith for owing him money, but other than Dixon's word, I have no idea if there is any truth to these rumors. If Dixon was the killer, it would definitely be in his best interest to divert suspicion towards other people. But in order to figure out what really happened in this case, let's look at each of the different suspects. Right from the outset, I've always had my doubts that Eric Smith was the perpetrator, as there's really nothing to implicate him aside from Dixon's account of an argument which Smith claimed never even happened. Even though Dixon said that Tomoyasu was demanding Smith owe him $50,000 to $60,000 which he had pocketed from their failed business together, the police did look into the allegations and discovered that the most these men had invested in the business was $15,000 each. Granted, if this conversation did occur, Dixon could have easily misheard the numbers and gotten $15,000 and $50,000 mixed up. Maybe Dixon did overhear a conversation Tomoyasu and Smith were having about money, but he greatly exaggerated the details and made it sound like a heated argument. However, if Smith really was embezzling money, or had committed any financial malfeasance, I think investigators would have found something to incriminate him. It sounds like Tomoyasu and Smith were genuinely close, lifelong friends who were almost like brothers, so without any hard evidence pointing directly at Smith, I have no reason to believe he's responsible. Incidentally, I always crack up during Smith's Unsolved Mysteries interview when he's asked to address Dixon's allegations and says, "Don lives in a fantasy world." Now let's move on to Sheriff Wampler. On the surface, there is good reason to be suspicious about him. I have to admit that when I first learned about this story and saw that the sheriff had gone to the trouble of burning a mattress where a murder victim was found, my knee-jerk reaction was that Wampler had to be involved and was orchestrating a cover-up. I mean, I honestly cannot think of another murder investigation where something like this has happened. Yes, I can definitely believe that one would be compelled to burn a soiled mattress and bedding where a decomposing body was found, but I've never heard of it being done this quickly before a proper investigation could be performed. Not to mention the fact that moving a mattress is a very difficult thing to do, especially if you're carrying it downstairs outside a house while it's covered with fluids from a decomposing body. So you wouldn't think anybody would go to that much trouble unless they really had to. Given the fact that Wampler asked Don Dixon to help move the mattress and personally set it on fire, and that Dixon did so without hesitation before he became a suspect himself, I started wondering if perhaps Wampler and Dixon were colluding together in order to cover up this murder. After all, if a sheriff wanted to destroy the mattress for purely compassionate reasons, why wouldn't he ask one of his deputies to help him? Why ask a guy who's just gone through the trauma of discovering his friend's body? But the more I thought about it, the more I started to see things from Wampler's point of view. Yes, burning the mattress was an undeniable mistake, which could have seriously hindered the investigation, but I could actually understand Wampler's logic for doing this if he was completely innocent. Remember, when Eric's body was originally discovered, no one suspected a homicide because the decomposition had covered up the bullet holes in his head, so for all they knew, he simply died of natural causes in his bed and remained there for days. Of course, it was still very presumptuous for Wampler to destroy the mattress before an autopsy was even performed, but Hood River is a small town which probably wasn't used to dealing with violent crime. In fact, before this, their last murder had taken place back in 1995. It's not uncommon for small-town police forces to make mistakes while investigating serious crimes like murder because of inexperience. In Wampler's eyes, there was probably no reason to believe a homicide had taken place, so he genuinely wanted to spare Eric's family the grief of seeing the horribly soiled mattress and bedding where his body was found. In many cases, I would probably denounce this type of reasoning as absurd, but for some odd reason, I kind of believe Wampler here. While I was going over potentially malicious reasons why Wampler would want to burn that evidence, I remembered the rumors about Eric supposedly having an affair with his wife. Perhaps Wampler was paranoid that Eric and his wife would have had sex in that bed, so he wanted to destroy potentially DNA evidence which could have pointed back to her. However, the main reason I think Wampler's reasons might not have been malicious is because Eric's body wasn't found for 5 days. Eric's house was located in a very remote area, so if Wampler wanted to destroy evidence, he probably could have visited the house at any point during that 5-day period and burned the mattress without anyone noticing. It would have been far less conspicuous than doing it after the rest of the police force had already visited the scene. Wampler could not have anticipated that the bullet holes in Eric's head would be covered up by the decomposition and that his death wouldn't be ruled a homicide immediately. If that happened, there's no way Wampler would have been able to justify burning the evidence. While it is odd that Wampler specifically asked Dixon to burn the mattress for him, I don't buy that they were in collusion together. After all, it was Dixon who started pointing the finger at Wampler and spreading the rumors about Eric's affair with his wife, and I don't see why he would plant the seeds of suspicion like that if they were working together to cover up a murder. I've seen a number of interviews with law enforcement officers on Unsolved Mysteries in which they faced accusations of corruption or negligence in their investigations, and some of them would come across as arrogant and shady, and unwilling to admit that they'd done something wrong. But Wampler was willing to take full responsibility for his wrong-headed decision to burn the mattress, and on the surface, he does come across as a nice enough guy who only had the best intentions when he made that decision. It's worth noting that in December of 2006, Wampler found himself at the center of a tragic story which garnered worldwide attention when he headed up a rescue operation to find 3 mountain climbers who had gone missing and perished on Mount Hood. During a book about the incident written by Karen James, the widow of one of the climbers, she praised Wampler's professionalism and his sensitivity with dealing with the victim's loved ones. So if Wampler is a law enforcement officer who places a heavy emphasis on genuine compassion for the families of his victims, then that would explain his actions in this case. Burning the mattress may have been a very misguided decision, but not a deliberate attempt at a cover-up. Wampler's actions would definitely look more suspicious if he had a clear-cut motive to want Eric dead, but much like Don Dixon's allegations about Eric Smith, his story about Eric having an affair with Wampler's wife has never been substantiated. If the affair never happened, then I don't see any reason why Wampler would want to cover up this crime. So while the sheriff is definitely guilty of mishandling crucial evidence, I'm not so sure he's guilty of murder. It's now time to move on to our third suspect, Don Dixon, who many people believe has generated more red flags than anyone else. Like I mentioned earlier, Don is a strange character, and even if he didn't commit this murder, he almost seems like a guy who relishes all the attention this murder has brought him. There's been a lot of speculation that Don greatly exaggerated the nature of his friendship with Eric, and made their relationship sound a lot closer than it really was. I know Eric and Don definitely did business together, but since Eric died, it seems like Don has taken every opportunity to paint themselves as best buds, even though many of Eric's other friends apparently didn't even know who Don was until after the murder. It's kind of funny how Eric Smith, who has always questioned Don's claims about the friendship, states during his Unsolved Mysteries interview that Eric was the best man at his wedding, and then the segment immediately cuts to a photograph of them together at the wedding to support this claim. But we really only have Don's word that he and Eric had this sort of close relationship. In some people's eyes, this could provide a potential motive for why Don would want to murder Eric. If Eric thought Don's behavior was becoming too obsessive and stalkerish, and he told Don to leave him alone, Don might have responded by lashing out and killing him. On the other hand, however, Don did possess a key to the back door of Eric's house, which is how he was able to enter inside and discover Eric's body. We know Eric and Don had a business relationship, but would Eric have provided him with a key to his house unless he really trusted the guy? But then again, Eric may not have actually given Don a spare key, but Don could have swiped it while he was in the house at some point, and then used it to let himself inside later on. Now, if you visit the Unsolved Mysteries message board I'm always referring to from the Sitcoms Online forum, there is a massive 40-page thread about this case, with a number of interesting posts, some from people who claim to have known Eric personally. One of them is a poster with the username Dragonfly333221, who also questions whether Don and Eric were really as close as Don claimed. In one post, they shared an interesting piece of info. Don apparently said that he helped Eric install the security alarm at his home, and that they were the only two people who knew the code. Now, I can't find any confirmation in any of the official sources about a security alarm, but if that info is correct, then this would make Don look even more suspicious. As far as I can tell, there were no signs of forced entry into the house, yet the only other person who possessed the key and the alarm code happened to find Eric's body? Even though Eric's body was found on his bed, it's never been made clear if it looked like he was shot while he was sleeping. If he was, and there were no signs of any break-in or struggle, then this opens up a potential scenario where someone with a spare key and the alarm code sneaks into Eric's home in the middle of the night and shoots him in his bed. The alternative explanation is that Eric knew his killer and let him inside the house willingly. It was estimated he had been dead 4 or 5 days before he was found. Due to the advanced state of decomposition, Eric was likely killed shortly after Diana Anderson left his home, but I don't know how much time passed. While they were together, Eric had heard tapping on his window, his doorbell ringing, and the sound of someone running away. It was late at night by this point, so if someone came to the door after Diana left, would Eric really have let them inside the house? Well, he might have, if it was someone he knew and trusted. But let's talk about Dixon's odd actions when he discovered Eric's body. During his Unsolved Mysteries interview, Don gets emotional when describing the moment, and claims that he said a prayer before he called 911. Yet Eric's sister Ramona claims that she learned her brother was dead when Don phoned her right after finding his body. She said Don sounded quite hysterical over the whole thing, which doesn't quite fit his story about taking a moment to calmly say a prayer before calling for help. If Don was the killer, you could easily infer that he was putting on an act for Ramona, much like all those 911 calls you hear on true crime shows, where husbands put on this emotional, dramatic performance about how they've just discovered that their wife is dead, but then it later turns out that they actually killed them. Don's use of the phrase, "there's no exit wounds," is the strangest part of his call. Don's rationale is that even though Eric's body was decomposed, his first thought upon finding him was that Eric had taken his own life, since he was apparently feeling depressed at that time. But since there was no gun near Eric's body, I'm not sure why Don would immediately jump to that conclusion. When the police and paramedics arrived at the scene, they initially did not notice any sign of gunshot wounds and believed Eric's death was natural causes, so I don't understand why Don would have been so certain that Eric was shot. And to top it off, when Sheriff Wampler asked Don to help him burn the mattress and the bedding, he agreed to do so without hesitation. If Don was so quick to share his belief with Ramona that Eric had been shot, why wouldn't he say something to the sheriff? And even if Don was completely innocent, what kind of person makes a frantic phone call like that to a deceased victim's relative immediately after discovering the body? Shouldn't the notification of next of kin be done by a trained professional in these situations, not by some hysterical acquaintance of the victim who is jumping to conclusions about gunshot wounds before the police have even arrived? I'm really curious to know how well Don and Ramona knew each other, because if Don exaggerated his friendship with Eric, and Ramona learned about her brother's death during a frantic call from a guy she didn't even know, then I can't imagine how strange that must have been for her. So could Don have been driven to murder over his obsession with Eric? Well, it must be said that Don was a married man at the time, though he revealed it in a rather odd fashion during his Unsolved Mysteries interview when he said, quote, "I have no way of knowing who was involved with Eric Tomiyasu's death. The only ones I know that didn't do it are my wife and myself," end quote. But if by chance, Don had developed some feelings for Eric which stretched beyond friendship, and he was spying on him during his date with Diana, I could see a scenario where he decides to toy with the couple by tapping on the windows and ringing the doorbell before he enters the home and kills Eric after Diana has left. Once a couple of days pass, and Eric's friends start mentioning that no one has heard from him, Don takes it upon himself to return to the house and discover Eric's body, hoping that this would prevent anyone from thinking he's a suspect. His frantic phone call to Ramona is nothing more than an act to create the impression that he is distraught over the whole thing. But as strange as Don's behavior may be, there is no hard evidence that he committed this crime. However, let's get back to the aforementioned Unsolved Mysteries board, as I'm going to talk about one of the more infamous posts in the history of the forum. In 2010, there was a post made by someone with the username MSamSpade who claimed to have inside knowledge of the case. MSamSpade said a number of bad things about Eric Smith and Sheriff Wampler and continued to push forward the rumor that Eric was having an affair with Wampler's wife. And they also claimed that Eric often referred to Don Dixon as his quote-unquote best friend and confidant, and threw in this line, quote, "The day before his death, Eric had bought Taco Bell to Dixon's office to share lunch with him, an event that happened several times a week," end quote. Well then, that settles it. If they had that type of bond over Taco Bell lunches, then there's no way it could have led to murder. Yeah, that detail about Taco Bell is so superfluous that even though the poster referred to Don Dixon in the third person, many people suspected that MSamSpade was Don Dixon. Of course, this would turn out to be the only time MSamSpade ever posted in the forum, and when other posters attempted to ask him follow-up questions, there was no response. So I would take most of the information from MSamSpade's post with a grain of salt, but there was one detail from them which checked out. They did make mention of Diana Anderson having an ex-boyfriend who was the father of her child, but also had an extensive criminal record and a violent temper. As far as I can tell, this info about the ex-boyfriend was never revealed publicly until he was mentioned in the KOIN news story in 2016. So even though some of MSamSpade's info is suspect, I do believe they probably had inside knowledge of this case. Honestly, even though the Unsolved Mysteries segment focused on three specific suspects, I was always surprised they didn't put more emphasis on Eric's date with Diana. I see no indication that Diana herself was ever considered a suspect, but when I learned that she had an ex-boyfriend with a history of stalking behavior, I wondered why he wasn't considered a more serious suspect from the get-go. I mean, Eric's home was in a remote location, and somebody was tapping on the window and ringing the doorbell while Eric and Diana were together, and then Eric just happened to be murdered after Diana left. I have a hard time believing that there isn't a connection here. It's also worth reiterating that Eric and Diana were just friends for years, but this officially marked their first date together. If Diana had a jealous ex-boyfriend who found out she was now dating another man and then proceeded to follow her to his house, it makes sense that he would feel compelled to toy with them and then murder his rival. Out of all the theories presented in this case, this is probably the most logical. But if this ex-boyfriend is the killer, the one thing which raises questions is how he would have gotten inside Eric's house. As far as I know, there were no signs of forced entry, and I'm not sure Eric would have willingly opened the door for this guy, especially if it was late at night. What if Eric was murdered by someone we don't even know about? This case has often been compared to another infamous segment from Unsolved Mysteries, the murder of Sammy Wheeler. As you might recall, this was another story about a murder victim in which there were three prime suspects: Sammy's twin brother, his girlfriend, and her ex-husband. All three of them spent the entire segment slinging mud at each other and making accusations of murder, even though the authorities had pretty much ruled them all out as suspects by that point. And in the end, it did turn out that Sammy was just the victim of a random act of violence from a stranger who robbed him. So what if the circumstances of this case are the same? We have three potential suspects in the murder of Eric Tomiyasu, yet it seems like at least one, if not two of them, were only under suspicion because the third suspect made unsubstantiated accusations about them. If it turned out that neither Wampler, Smith, or Dixon were responsible for this crime, and the killer was somebody who has never even shown up on the radar, I would not be the least bit surprised. So here's where I currently stand on each of them. Eric Smith, I am 100% convinced, had no involvement in this murder at all. Sheriff Wampler made a very questionable decision to destroy evidence, but I'm inclined to think he did not do so with malicious intent and is innocent of the actual crime. And Don Dixon? I guess I'm still on the fence about him. I certainly don't want to condemn him because of his odd behavior, because that does not make one a murderer. He doesn't really have much of a motive to kill Eric, unless he was greatly exaggerating about the nature of their friendship and completely went off the rails when Eric rejected him. I think the one thing which makes me unable to entirely rule Don out as a suspect is the fact that he possessed a key to Eric's house. The crime really gives off the appearance of being committed by someone who knew the layout of the house and was able to sneak covertly into Eric's bedroom and shoot him there. But I can also see the other perspective on Don Dixon, that he's nothing more than a drama queen who inadvertently found himself at the center of a murder investigation after discovering the victim's body, and used that as an opportunity to make himself the center of attention. Hell, you could still see that when Don was interviewed in the KOIN news segment in 2016, and he stated, quote, "There are at least two people who, if I could, I would have them arrested. One is the father of her child, and the other is our ex-sheriff," end quote. Well, that statement really doesn't even make much sense. Was he implying that Sheriff Wampler and Diana Anderson's ex-boyfriend had colluded together to commit this crime? It almost sounds to me like Don was just trying to stir up drama again. I used to feel a lot more strongly about Don's guilt, but it would not surprise me at all if he had nothing to do with the crime and is just a red herring. Now, Diana's ex-boyfriend, I can't really express too many thoughts about him as a suspect since there's very little information out there about him. But on the surface, the scenario of a jealous ex becoming violent over seeing his former girlfriend with another man and committing murder over it seems like the most plausible theory to me. Like I said in the intro, this case is a true whodunit, but thus far, there really isn't one suspect I can point to and say with 100% certainty that they're the killer. In the end, I guess I lean mostly towards either Dixon, the ex-boyfriend, or possibly an unknown third party. I do hope we can get answers someday, because this is a really intriguing mystery where I would love to know who did it and what their motive was. So if you happen to have any information about the unsolved murder of Eric Tomiyasu, please contact the appropriate authorities. But if you just have your own thoughts about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email at robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Another reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you have a moment, please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. We've released some neat bonus episodes for our donors in tiers 2 and 3, and we'll be releasing another one this month, so to learn more information, feel free to visit our Patreon page. I also just wanted to give another shout-out to my supporters at the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit and the aforementioned Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum. If you get the chance, be sure to check out their 40-page thread on Eric Tomiyasu, because it's really interesting. And if the poster and Sam Spade is listening, feel free to contact me and share more details about this case with me, including more info about the Taco Bell lunches, if you're so inclined. I need to provide a big thanks to Miguel Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. And one final reminder, we are just over a week and a half away from the Canadian Crime Podcast event, a live show being held at the Hideout Bar in Toronto on July 22nd, which will include myself and a number of other Canadian true crime podcasters, and even a couple of our American podcasting friends will be making the trip and stopping by to make guest appearances. Tickets are only $10, and if you haven't purchased them already, you can find a link to our Eventbrite page in our episode description. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. So have yourself a good week, and join me next Wednesday for a brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm sorry.